I'm Cindy Temi.
I'm Gracie May.
And I'm Ola Oweo.
And we are
Frobeats,
your favourite Afropop podcast.
Oh, wow.
I was keeping it really calm today. As in
Okay.
Sound like a cockroach.
Moving on. We're going to do the moving on.
Who's sharing today? We didn't say.
We've done it. Oh, the person that sits in the middle.
Low, is it? Slow down. Hi, guys. Okay. Gracie. Over to you.
Hello, straight in.
I'm joking now.
Oh my god, my eyes are closed.
Gracie, how's your weekend?
Okay. I'm sick.
Oh. Oh my god, we have to touch up. Okay, cool.
Okay. Is it corona?
We don't know because we've not been tested, because me too, I'm not well, but I don't think mine is.
Are you that you've been coughing since episode one?
I need to stop shouting. No, I actually shout the loudest.
Well,
it's not a dry cough. It's actually very chesty, as one of my colleagues said today. She was like, "Oh, good, it's a chesty cough." I was like, "Yep."
Yeah. That first one that you were doing before was.
But that was from Ghana to Lagos problems.
Is it?
Yeah.
Two people in Nigeria have been tested positive for coronavirus.
But they're not Nigerian, so let's just.
No. I was like the other day. Someone was Anyway, I won't say where I got my sources from. So they've been saying that essentially coronavirus is
man-made.
Like, well, okay, that was where I was going with this.
But not a black disease.
It's not, because we
have enough.
Because we actually tend to bath.
Oh.
Quite well.
Nah, the views of Cindy Temi, yeah.
I'm not representative.
At all.
Than those that are subject to
it. But saying that though, remember there was a whole thing on Twitter where certain demographic of people were saying they don't wash their legs, they just let the soapy water run down.
Oh, yes.
And the people tweeting weren't of African and Caribbean descent.
And they are the ones with corona. I'm joking. There's no correlation.
At all. Joking. Please.
But
no,
I do actually wash my whole body and stuff. And I don't use antibacterial for a virus.
For a virus? Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
But then I was told that...
That's so bad.
No, she's being so shady. Also, the antibac is also antiviral as well. But it's just like the nice word is antibac. It's too
only
long
works
to
for 20 minutes.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, only works
and it's
for
not
minutes.
A substitute to washing your hands bathing.
Yeah. You're supposed to like wash your hands after
and
minutes.
Bath.
And I think the thing is, you're supposed to wash your hand for 20 seconds, so the equivalent of like singing happy birthday to you.
Depending
I
on
also
how
think one of the main reasons that this hasn't actually travelled to Africa is because there's just not Africans going in back and forth.
Anyhow, like they own every part of the world.
But Italians are really here. I don't understand the Chinese-Italian correlation.
Oh my gosh, this is my view, right? Because why have we not heard anything about like whether or not
and the Spanish though.
Yes. Why is this not spreading in animals? Like, how do we not know that it doesn't spread in animals? One. And two, all of the biggest outbursts that we've had in terms of the most amount of people dying have been, in my view, obviously we don't know this detail, but it sort of feels as though when you can get that many people together that have it, that's when everyone dies. 166 people died in one day. They must have all been in the same room, surely. How could you just be finding out across the country, you die, and then they're just sitting there counting. Like
it's
when
true.
It went up by like 2,000 people in China, guaranteed that hospital that they built in 48 hours, everybody died.
I'm screaming. I think, okay, so back to the first point about animals. There's a rumor that it started off with a mosquito biting a bat, and then that same mosquito biting a human, which is why it got into humans. There's that one rumor.
Mm.
The other rumor is what you said about it being man-made
in
a lab somewhere, and it was apparently like patented or trademarked, whatever you want to call it, like 4 years ago. But this is coronavirus -19, so there's been 18 different versions, which is probably why it has been trademarked. Separately,
SARS was one.
Yeah, SARS. And what was the other one? There's another one, Chad, that was another coronavirus. But no, my other point was going to be, how is it that like Spain and Italy have like a high death count and China has a high death count? What happened to all the countries in between?
Yeah, it's true. But then maybe, so apparently in northern Italy, that's actually a real hotspot for Chinese people to go on tourists, in terms of tourists, as is Venice, so that's one thing. Again, another reason why maybe Africa, there's no, because the people that
the Chinese are there,
but they reside, they don't go back and forth, so maybe that's the reason. And also they say that, you know, it can't survive in high temperatures and so on and so forth.
Also, you can be a carrier and not have any symptoms. So maybe those people that were travelling back and forth were just bringing it to Italy, not knowing that they were infected.
They were doing the work.
And then they went and sat in the hotel with everybody and everybody died. Sorry,
it's a bit mad though,
lost people.
Oh, yeah. sorry.
I mean, obviously, it's a serious subject. We are just making jest out of it for the sake of making jest. But yeah,
also,
we understand.
Moving
that
on from your
topic. Was on fire when I said I was coughing. They were like, guys, call one. They were like, Gracie, call 111. And I was like, it's not it.
I was being consistent.
And the thing is, the reason why I didn't want to call 911 was because apparently somebody said that their friend, they were got told to stay where they were, and then somebody came in like a that,
boilers.
Yeah, I'm not. What? Nah, stay where I am.
Isolation.
I'm going home. Meet me at home. Nobody's in between the car and my house. You can meet me at my house. But anyway, God forbid we don't have Coral. Coral, that's the name.
I'm not going. I was supposed to go to the Philippines. Oh, in all the honesty, the reason I'm not going is...
Because
that's a no. And actually, I'm a big age of 28. I literally asked him the question outright. I said, is this one of those situations when you're saying no and it's like, there's no conversation, this is facts. Like, you have had the final say, and he didn't even look at me. It was like, oh, right, okay.
So actually,
I'll just go and
booked.
Tell everyone that I'm not coming. Right. And then, like, yeah, today I was like, oh, Dad, by the way, I told him I'm not coming. He said, okay, good.
No remorse.
No remorse.
But you
get
him.
No.
Not even under the terms of
Coral? No, I think until the government actually call, like, a no-fly zone, do you not get your money back? No situation.
Oh, okay, so Pops is going to give you your money back.
Well, that one is a question to be asked. But I just got a new job, they'll tell me there.
Congrats again.
Thank you. New second job.
Some of us are struggling for it.
Don't worry, it's coming.
All right, so we're taking it like funny.
Kind of.
Can we do something light? I don't want to kick off because my subject is deep.
I feel like mine's a bit deep.
Okay, should I do mine then?
Please.
Okay, so ZZ, mine's like really, really brief. But ZZ Mills called out Wiley for basically cancelling on her show a number of times. And then reaching out to one of the big players in the music industry to go on an interview. So basically what it is I'm drawing on the fact that we all attended the Afrobeats Takeover, where Gracie Mae hosted a workshop on how to succeed in the Afrobeats industry.
Yeah, how to break in.
Keynote speech.
Yeah. Email pending for the topics. So basically, and she gave us insights into basically how to get into the industry, what you need to do in order to drive your brand and etc. And one of the ladies speaking on the panel was Afua from...
So she is on ITV as a panelist.
Yep.
She's on Arise TV. She's on the BFM. She's on Yang TV as well. She's Scottish. She's like the first black Scottish person I know.
My cousins are actually, I tried to see, oh, do you know X, Y, and Z? And she was like, no, but they're going to connect actually because they happen to be from the same place in Scotland.
Scotland.
But anyway, so she touched on a topic that basically we're talking about like Afrobeats artists when they come and do shows and whatnot in London and they do their press runs and then they sort of pick preference as to which brands or companies they want to do their interviews, who they favour in terms of press releases and press conferences or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, so me and Grace are also at an event yesterday, King Promise's UK headlining tour. Shout out to King Promise. And a reference was actually made about another artist coming into London and they're doing a press tour and then we were like, oh, okay, are they doing... Basically, Grace asked, are they going to do a press tour? And they were like, yeah, they're going to do BBC... they're going to do some random, the other
Capital.
And we were like, oh, okay, cool. And then the person was like, oh, where are you guys from? And we were like, oh, okay. Well,
not Capital or BBC.
But the point is, we get the fact that when artists come into town, they want to obviously target the big brands. But what about those that are actually rooting for your music and pushing your music constantly? Like, we are segregating ourselves from... the other genres that we could be pushing to make sure that our Afrobeat artists are actually being pushed forward, and that's kind of like our focus of music. So when you come into town and then you decide to not you don't pay us any mind in terms of doing press releases, you're actually excluding your major audience, because we've made sure that our main aim and drive is to put you guys on the map. And we just wanted to basically talk about like, what should artists be doing? Because sometimes I question whether it's their managers, whether it's their PR managers, or whether it's the artists themselves, but in terms of what they should be doing in terms of supporting the... there's a terminology that Afua used.
Grassroots
of those actually pushing their music and brand.
So I guess to further that conversation, I have a few thoughts, but if we start off with the initial premise of if you do go to the big national platforms, They will play your track before your interview and after, and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say that your core following doesn't listen to those national platforms. They do. But realistically, translating that interview into ticket sales on a national platform versus on a grassroots platform that already have the ear of your intended audience, it makes most sense to go where you've already got that connection. Of course, every artist is trying to expand their reach. Afrobeats is becoming more mainstream anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point in saying, okay, I'm just going to do grassroots and not do national. But to me personally, you need a balance. And also, a Capital Extra interview will be half an hour. A BBC interview might be an hour at max. Okay, that's an hour and a half out of your day. There's no point in not doing the other like, I could name in a breath what I guess a list of all the other community stations, if you want to call them that, or the more grassroots platforms, whether that's radio, whether that's podcast, whether
TV.
That's YouTube, whether that's TV, what have you. I could name them, and it's not that many. You would literally need to do a week of press, maybe 3 stops a day, but that makes a difference between selling out and selling tickets at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's better for an artist, and I purely put it on the PR agents they work with, because I don't think many artists know what publication houses to go to per country. They probably know for their own homeland, but for other countries I don't know that they have that knowledge.
Do you think that they, when if they were to get the knowledge, do you think in some situations PR companies then make the decision to say actually?
I think I'm not going to overplay or underplay it. I do feel like a lot of artists, when they get to a certain stage, are snobby. They're like, well, I don't need to keep doing the smaller platforms, if you want to use the word smaller.
Mm.
Forgetting that that's actually, not only have we been rooting for them the longest, we have that connection already.
Yeah.
So if I'm listening to, if I'm a Capital Extra or BBC listener, I could equally be into rock, I could equally be into pop, I could equally be into grime. And not to say that people that like those genres don't like Afrobeats, but when there's already a specialist show on a specialist platform that has the ear, even if they have the ear of, as Afro said, just 12,000, most venues in this country aren't up to 12,000. I think Wembley is, the main O2 Arena is, but all the other O2 venues are less. And I'm even trying to think about the music spaces that people use.
Mm-hmm.
But without rambling,
yeah.
I feel like I've gone on a little bit. It's just important to if you're coming to a new country and you're trying to spread awareness about a show or a product or whatever, like, just take the time to do the press tour, because it makes a difference.
It really does.
Yeah, I don't think I have much to add. I think I completely agree. I also think sometimes it's the stats that I want to see in terms of why they make those decisions. Because the reality of it, if we're trying to convert your like sort of press, like you being on the show, into ticket sales or into album like listens or streams and so on and so forth, like, what is the likelihood, what is the click rate of someone that has never engaged with your music but you're on the show, to people that have always engaged in your music that have now remembered your tickets are on sale? Does that make sense? Because I actually think, exactly, because I can't imagine that conversion rate can be higher on BBC than it would be on a local or community radio station, because the reality of it is that, like, especially if you think about the way tickets for concerts are pushed, is sponsored posts through Instagram, like, everything is about going to the demographic of people that are already going to buy it.
Yeah.
And actually what happens is, as soon as one person has bought it and one person has tweeted it, then you know, boom, cascade effect, all of a sudden they're telling you that there's barely any tickets left.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what they do. Maybe they rely on those, so then they don't put the time into the press tours. But yeah, I don't agree with it.
So what you're saying is they feel like they've already got that market, so they don't have to push to that market?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's disrespectful. Maybe that's the way. If that yields something in terms of, like, just doing it through sponsored posts and so on, maybe they feel like they don't have to put the work in.
But then I feel like I look at people like, when Kevin Hart was pushing his movie with Tiffany Haddish,
mm-hmm.
he was on every platform.
Every, yeah.
National platforms, local platforms, every YouTube channel. He did a video with, like, Michael Dapper, I think it was like, this is how Americans say, like, pants, or we say trousers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, this was a while after
Master strategic. Yeah.
So I was like, what did you feel like the benefit of going to that platform was?
Mm.
He knew he had a large Black British following.
Mm. Really?
And the movie was targeted to Black people.
Mm. Mm.
So he had that link.
Mm-hmm.
So I sometimes think that some artists, PRs, whatever, are a bit too focused on the, what's the word I'm looking for? Of the stature. Or prestige,
yeah.
or status,
yeah.
of a platform, as opposed to the actual
listeners
are... objective, which is to push sales of whatever it is that you're trying to push. So I feel like it's a grumpy convo.
But yeah, but yeah, no, I mean, in that scenario, obviously it was very down to the PR person at that point because we haven't talked less of the actual artist itself. But yeah, no, I just feel like the point is just to encourage, obviously we just took off the back of ZZ Mills and Wiley. Apparently Wiley was saying to ZZ that, you know, we're still cool, whatever, he's going to come. But it's the fact that you've wasted, we all know what it's like to prepare for an artist that's due to come to your show. You do the research. It's also time and money for us as well because we have to sit there, research you. Even if we know about you, we need to know a lot more about you, if that makes sense. We have to have our questions ready. We have to make the interview fun. We're not just doing bog standard. I don't know if you've ever seen a Gracie Mae interview, but I like the one with Tenny. That was really cute, where you picked words from her song.
And actually, you know what? That's a good point. I feel like when they go on a national platform, they do just ask
that.
Bog standard,
standard questions.
What? How would you describe your sound? Nobody cares. Like, the end listener does not care because we know who they are already.
Yeah,
you don't need
true.
To describe them. Or what would you say your biggest achievement is? We know because we were there when you were selling out these.
So basically, we are here. You know, we are here, and we continue. Obviously, we will continue support because that is our platform. Afrobeats, Afropop culture is our platform. So I don't. Why not give back? You know. Give back to the community then.
It's true.
Moving on.
Okay, cool. So I don't know if you guys have seen, but the legendary Mallory Backman's book of Noughts and Crosses is now out on the BBC in terms of a video series currently out. If you don't know what Noughts and Crosses is, it's essentially a book that was written by Mallory Backman, I would probably say, I don't want to guess, somewhere between 10 and 15 years
ago.
Essentially what the narrative of the book is about, it's a four-part series. People think it's three parts. She added an extra one. But it's a four-part series where she basically just flips the world as it is on its head. So how it works is that rather than white people being the most I guess the dominant race, or the one of which there are more of, it's actually black people. And then as a result...
Sorry, let's pause. The one in which there are more of. You know, there are more black people in the
world.
That's true. So supremacy is what she means.
So yeah, I'm trying to pick my words. I'm trying to pick my words really carefully. Let's use the word dominant. Dominant race?
Dominant,
yeah. Dominant race. I guess supremacy. Yeah. Superior race. Essentially, it's flipped on its head and it's black people being the superior race. There's been public outcry, obviously. People can't just write a narrative, do you know what
no,
I mean?
They
like,
can't, you
goodness.
Know,
so anyway, she
mad.
Sent a tweet, oh, every day. She sent a tweet basically saying, by the way, to those who those accusing me of being anti-white or stating I hate white people, to create such a story as Noughts and Crosses, I'm not even going to dignify your absurd nonsense with a response. Go take a seat way over there in the cold, dark and bitter haters corner. Now,
I thought you were going to say the cold, dark bits of London.
Yeah. When I was reading it as well, I was like, oh, it's about to. But yeah, so she's sent a tweet saying that. I guess my question to you is, why are we still in a position where we can't flip the narrative without being called racist? Because I also think the idea of the fact that, I'll leave it here, but I think the idea of the fact that we're flipping a true story and being called racist as a result is disgusting.
They can't
it's
take
funny
it.
Funny, because that means if we are going to flip it back to our reality, that means y'all are racist.
It's true.
I just think anything pro-black is deemed as anti-white.
Right.
When they performed at Brits, who else? When Stormzy and Burna Boy performed at the Brits as well, anything that's pro-black is deemed as anti-white. Mm. The only thing in the news lately that has been pro-black has been the black boy that hugs Meghan and even kissed her.
But
on the
even
cheek.
That, but even, have you not seen the comments of Fiat 500 Twitter? They're basically saying, oh my God, since when was in it a word? He clearly didn't study English. He has no manners, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, why are you so mad?
Yeah. Even when Piers Morgan took to his, he believed in him.
Piers
and Fiat 500 Twitter want to come for him.
Fake
laughing. They put him on the ITV.
Yeah, good morning.
Kudo to that kid, man. He's good. You shot your shot at the right time.
He's very eloquent. He still is. I think they invited him on as well to speak about his mom.
His mom was there.
Yeah.
That was lovely.
Articulate, eloquent.
Yeah.
Was he head boy?
Yeah.
I think
go ahead and shine. Young man.
And he's half Nigerian. His surname was like Okoye or something.
Yeah.
Okoye, I think, is his full name. His mom was clearly Jamodo, but yeah, hold tight. But my point was, anything pro-black is deemed anti-white, and I don't know why, because I guess when they flip it, then, oh, but anything pro-white is anti-black. Is it a valid question, actually? Is anything pro-white, anti-black?
I don't think there is pro-white. I think that's what the problem is. In all,
and but are there spaces where there are allowed to be pro-white, where it's not deemed as racism?
But I think the spaces in which they exist, let's look at the reality of the situation. The spaces in which pro-white exist are in racist situations. It would be rednecks, it would be KKK, it would be those sorts of... if I'm speaking for you, comment and tell me that I'm speaking for you and that I'm wrong. But from what I can see, I feel like pro-black is birthed as a result of people, of your narrative not being out there, and therefore you need to create it for yourself. Now, I've always said this, that I don't feel like white people are a peoples as together. They just live their life because they are the dominant race. We're the ones that have had to sort of create a space and a unity for ourselves so that we can, because we understand ourselves, we understand the way we've grown up and so on, and as a result, we can then sort of support one another. Now, that need doesn't exist in white culture, but where it does, from what I can see, I feel like it exists in the situations where you're trying to diminish other cultures, aka the KKK, see what I did there, and like rednecks and so on and so forth. It's the furthering of something. Like, we're not trying to, like, in this situation, we're not trying to further black people to the point of supremacy. We just want ourselves to be noticed.
But even if we strip it back to, by like one layer, it's a fictional book. That's become a televised series.
Yeah.
Where black people are the dominant race, but somehow that's being racist. I mean, some historical, you know, what do they call it, historians? Oh God,
historians.
Yep. They said back in the day, obviously, Egyptian times, that black people were the dominant race, and then, you know, through years of power struggles or whatever, it's flipped, and this is the white people's time, and then again, there'll be an evolution where it'll be another racist time. So, you know, if you believe that, feel free to comment below. I don't agree.
No. So your comments will be blocked. Joking.
And
you
can
comment between yourselves, actually. You don't need to come to our I'm tired. Like, I genuinely am tired. Like, I saw a snippet of those comments today on that young black boy's tweet, and then I saw clips of comments of, I think, one of the super drugs in Barking had a queue outside it because everyone was trying to buy, like, anti-black and stuff, but there was, like, a majority of, like, ethnic minorities and just non-white people. And the comments below were just, like, absurd. Ooh, look who's buying anti-black. Not us. But you...
Actually, that reminds me, somebody tweeted and they were like, why are we stockpiling on tissue and anti-back, and what do we think people in Africa do or something?
That was wild.
And then I retweeted like, okay, first of all, we've got toilet paper and antibacterial
in
Africa.
We even have
how
soap.
Did we get drifted into this? Because
we weren't in it. And it was it not an Asian guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was quite
Bame,
confused. Because why didn't you just Bame. Use your own country as reference?
Because you have poverty there too.
Yeah.
In which you do. And I just feel like it was just very unnecessary to need to mention
Africa.
Yeah, like in that
like
scenario.
As a continent.
The reality is, it is to heart. Like every day I feel.
Yeah, microaggressions.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I just ignore y'all. Like, you don't want to be racist to me at the end of the day because I'm just not here for it. I saw an advert. There's a new advert out now for racism about what to do, how to handle racism on the bus.
Oh.
I don't know if you saw that.
No.
So basically, there's this white lady and she's talking to this man. The man's on the phone and he's speaking his language on the phone, not disturbing anyone. She's like, you're in our country, speak English. He's ignoring her as I would do because I really don't have time for you. And then some other man was like, you know what? You are right, madam. You are right. Some other Asian man, you are right. Let me translate for you what he's saying. So he basically translated loosely what the man was saying, but it was all lies. He was basically saying, as I'm looking at this white lady, her bosoms are so succulent, I want to eat them, blah, blah, blah. So then eventually, that was just a way to deal with it comically. And then the bus driver came and told the lady to get off because obviously racism isn't welcome on the buses in an ideal world, because that's how you guys think it really works. But anyway, and then so yeah, she got off the bus and then everyone lived happily ever after because everyone started laughing and realised that he wasn't actually translating the right thing. But me personally, you don't want to be racist around me, trust me.
Moral of the story, let her try me.
Comical effect aside.
Yeah.
My question still is, how do we define racism? Like, I'm sick and tired of people confusing prejudice, discrimination, and racism.
Or just unnice.
Oh my gosh, did we not do... I think I have definitions.
Please come with the definitions.
Ooh,
because
I don't have a
pro-black... No, it's not even a pro-black series. It's just a space where black people are seen as the dominant race. How is that racist?
Yeah.
At what point are we using prejudice thoughts? Okay, so I'm going to tell you my definitions, which hopefully align with what you had.
Mm-hmm.
So prejudice is when you have... a thought, it's just a thought that is based on one race being superior to another. Discrimination is where you take that thought and you put it into action. Mm-hmm. Racism is when you do both. So you have the thought, you have the action, and then you have power. So you're able to then influence whether it's infrastructure, institutions, legislation based on that racist thought that has become action that has translated into power. It could be involved with money, food, whatever. Yeah, sorry. So in my head and out loud, how does a fictional story that's translated into a television series, how does that translate into any transition of power?
But
or impact of power? Like what? Or we're going to say the power of the media.
You can I'm not going to say anything articulate here, but you can argue against that because there was an example, I think, on Twitter about a man in an African-American food store, and basically for his black customers, he reserves the best pieces of meat. He was telling them that this was his, and I think he charges them less or something.
But so that's still discrimination, because when we talk about power, it's about institutions.
This is just a small corner shop.
The next question would be like, then we would...
So unless all the shops in that area favoured black people and then it became like an industry standard that we only charge black people less, then as an institution, as an industry, that's then...
But then you can... Then the racist would argue that their action, just because institutionally it works in their favour, their action isn't institutionalised, if that makes sense.
Okay, if we strip it back again to that example, I'm happy to say that that's racist because he had power in that situation to charge both people equally, and he decided to favour someone based on their race. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to agree that that's racism. In reality, how does that have an effect outside of that fictional story? It has none.
I think the difficulty with it as well is also the idea that, like, I don't think a lot of people, because I agree with your definitions, I don't think a lot of people understand these parts of the definitions in terms of what an ism actually is. Like, a lot of people don't realise that power is a crucial factor in the structure of calling someone a racist or saying that there is an ism. And I think essentially what happens is that in those situations where you can use the word racist and someone does, because there's no word before it and prejudice doesn't suffice in a lot of the situations, people get taken aback by the fact you could use such a harsh word that has so many connotations of so many things that have happened in the past. Bro, whether or not you're KKK or actually you're just my boss that said something, it's racist because power exists. Mm-hmm. That's the reality of the situation. And I think the reason why, like, black people get so frustrated by this idea that we can't push our own people forward when no one has been doing it for us without being called racist ourselves, spinning the narrative, and all of a sudden that we're now racist towards white people. It's because we know that this structure is never going to immerse itself in us being the powerful ones.
We're only speaking to... forward is just affirmative action.
Exactly.
There's a difference between equality and equity, right? You guys have seen the image where equality is where you give everyone the same step, but because the person, the white person as an example, is already on a step up, it's never equal. Where equity is, you level the you level the steps, quote unquote, that you give to each person based on their starting point. And actually affirmative action is equity. It's trying to level the playing field, make sure everyone starts on an equal footing. And in terms of noughts and crosses, the black guy using his colloquialism, which is the language that he speaks on an everyday basis, to me, in both examples, there's no ism, there's no racism, because there's no transference of power, there's no abuse of power. It's just black people being black.
Yeah, that's it. And it's just
in white spaces.
In white spaces. And that's exactly when the confrontation comes. Like, as a result of black people being black in white spaces, two other black people and white people getting involved, all of a sudden we can now question whether or not their motives are to be racist. Like, no, we're just trying to be ourselves and tell our story, because that's the reality of it. We flipped a narrative that is true, that no one talks about in a good way, and all of a sudden we have a book that is now in English, it's in English lessons, it's changing the game, and it's telling a story that many of you guys couldn't tell in a positive way, and now all of a sudden we're trying to say that. Yeah, we had to do it for ourselves, exactly. And now all of a sudden we're trying to flip the narrative and say it's racist as well. Like, let us live and tell the story.
Yeah, just breathe, man.
Not just worry about yourself.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the actual issue is, because this has been a consistent theme in a lot of our podcasts, let us tell our story. Maybe the problem is that they don't tell their own. One, they want to tell you another story, but also
they want to tell you
exactly. Yes! Maybe it's because they want to tell you another story, or maybe they're just not interested in hearing it. Maybe they don't, they're not interested in stories. They just want to move on, live for the day and so on. And we think the past is important. But you can't silence us for that. It's not okay.
It's true.
Okay, we've gone from comical to deep.
To deep.
To very deep. I'm going to try and keep it as light as possible. But last week, I referred to the fact that I was going to bring up this topic. So here we are. Tenny just dropped a track called Marry. The lyrics are based on that meme is based on a primary school song that apparently kids in Nigeria used to sing. Did either of you school in Nigeria?
I didn't sing that song. Okay. And I was not sent there like the deported episode last week.
Why you put it
together? Sorry, I wasn't deported. I didn't get sent because get of shit. Misgivings. No.
Misgivings.
I was born there, I came here.
Okay. So,
yeah. Me too, I was born there.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I'll show you.
So you guys aren't even first generation, you're generation zero.
Is that?
Yeah, because you were born there. Oh, so your kids will be first generation.
Well, to be honest, my mom was actually born here. She
just did the switch.
My dad was even born here.
Hey. Whereas I'm second generation, my mom was born here and I'm born here, so.
Okay.
Anyway, that is not at all what I wanted to talk about.
Show us. We were so proud.
So Tay released a track based on a primary school song which says, when will you marry, this year, next year, or never? And I hinted to the fact that I wanted to speak about it last week purely because all of us on this panel are 25 plus, and to me it's a topic that is usually had in our kitchens, in our cars, when we're a little bit tipsy after a night out, and I just thought it might be good to share an aspect of it on this platform. There is no prerequisite that you guys have to go deep or even speak about personal experience. I'm just going to put that out there now. But I wanted to focus primarily on freezing eggs. So, me personally...
Pass the conversation, please.
But the reason why I wanted to focus on that part is because I feel like a lot of pressure on black women in the 25 to 35 bracket, if you will, isn't even really about finding your soulmate, someone that's going to push you forward, someone that's going to empower you, someone that's going to be a good husband. A lot of it is about body clock pressures. So, you know, Gracie Mae comes with facts and figures. Gracie Mae comes with what?
Facts and figures.
So I'm going to quickly a few facts and figures that might interest you. And yeah, I'm using my phone because I couldn't memorize all of this. So the average cost of having your eggs collected and frozen is £3,350.
How many do they collect?
That's a good question. I didn't actually find that out.
That's fine.
So you can get the money from being a coronavirus test patient.
Apparently, if you volunteer to have corona injected into you and then the drug injected into you, you get $3,000. It's not worth it.
You can use that money to freeze your eggs.
You probably won't have eggs. It's the end of it.
You freeze.
Okay, but when you have your eggs collected and frozen, obviously, for you to generate that many eggs, they have to do like the whole IVF process. So medication is between 500 to 1,500. That's on top of the 3,350. On top of that, each year that your eggs are on ice, it costs between £125 to £350 per year.
Can I freeze them myself?
On top of that, there's a price to have the eggs like multiplied in you. There's a price to have the eggs extracted from you. There's a price to have the medication injected in you so that you
That's
can
capitalism.
Produce.
You can multiply the eggs.
So basically when they do the extraction, they take out if memory serves me right, it's 8 to 10 eggs, but I didn't want to say it because I wasn't too sure. On top of that though, you also have to pay to have the eggs reinserted into you, which comes to 2,500. So the total process from start to end is roughly between £7,000 and £8,000. That's UK pounds. With all of that happening, the success rate
This is why you freeze them yourself and then you get the Tucky Mister. Like, what's that? Jane the Virgin.
Mary Jane.
I literally just saw it because I can't imagine.
Did they do that in Mary Jane?
I didn't watch.
I didn't watch that. Yeah.
Okay.
Jane
anyway,
the Virgin.
So that was the figures. These are the facts. The success rate of doing egg freezing and having them reimplanted and you actually becoming pregnant is only 18%. That's 1/8 if you use your own eggs, and 30% if you use a donor egg. So that is somebody that has just donated their eggs.
But if somebody has donated, so you omit the costs of having to extract it from you in the first place.
You do admit that omit that cost,
yeah.
But obviously you still have to take medication so that your body is prepared to have a pregnancy.
And
so
the turkey booster.
And the person that does all the implanting. Okay, last thing is if we put the race factor on it, because obviously this is not just a female platform, it's a black female platform. I wanted to add,
but feel free to listen if you ain't black and female.
Yes, we are not segregationalists, we're all inclusive.
Yeah,
how about that?
That's why we have free Nigerians on the
panel. Don't do things like
we are allowed to have our own spaces and feel comfortable in our own
spaces.
Yes!
Thank
you very much.
Tell them again.
So
this
the one thing I couldn't find was facts for black British women, because you know, they ain't trying to study us.
Mm-hmm.
But I did find facts for black, sorry, African American women. And this is the last fact before we dive into the convo. A fertility center at New York University Langone Medical Center did a study in between 2005 and 2011. And 80% of the respondents that had frozen their eggs were white females. Only 4% were black females.
Wow.
With all of that being said, my question to you is, the concept about marrying and the pressure to marry, is it purely children related, / do you feel that pressure, or is it about finding your soulmates? Who wants to start?
When will you marry? This year, next year?
Or never,
God forbid,
is how it is.
The pressure, okay, so talking from experience, my personal experience at this age now, I feel like the pressure is more in relation to, well, it's more, you could say the pressure is more in relation to getting married for the sake of having children, but I've made an unanimous decision that I will have a child out of wedlock if I have to. because I just
sorry,
feel like
mom.
The reality, yeah. But sorry, she doesn't mind anymore,
yeah,
okay? I just feel like the reality is that when I was younger, there wasn't talk of boyfriends. The idea of having a boyfriend, teenage pregnancy, was such a bad thing. And therefore, it was never on the forefront. And then where I've carried that on into... into my adult life, I feel like now I'm more concerned. I do genuinely believe that I would like to find like that ultimate soulmate, but at the same time I am quite conscious, obviously, having children. And there's one thing, obviously, you can freeze your eggs all you like, but it still doesn't guarantee the quality of child you produce, right? Because it's still, it doesn't,
say it with your chest.
No, but yeah, but it doesn't. And the thing is, for me, I personally wouldn't freeze my eggs simply because I don't like messing around like with my insides and whatever and external things, internal. I just genuinely believe in God that when the time is right, I will have like children at that age. And like, and the reality is that even people that start young, yeah,
young.
you said lessons earlier on, but I didn't want to say anything.
What did I say?
You said lessons.
Lessons instead,
yeah,
of what?
Lessons.
When did I say that?
I heard it too. They're born in Africa.
Second generation.
So,
critical.
The point is that even those that start young have. Even those that start
young
have children up until, like, you can have your first child at 23 and go on to have your last child at like 35, 37. So it's the fact that I know that as you get older, there are complications when it comes to having children and whatnot. But I just genuinely believe when the time is right, the time is right. But it's one of those things where I'm no longer focused on actually getting. I am focused on the back of my mind, but there's nothing more I can do. What am I going to do?
Impregnate yourself?
Force someone to marry me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And if the reality is, I could have been married off a long time ago. Whether I'd still be in the relationship now, whether I'd be happy, is another question. But the reality is, I'm not going to rush something. Like, I genuinely believe there is, I'm just not going to rush it.
Mm.
But in terms of having that child, like, if it happens, boy, it happens.
What about the stats that the production of eggs reduces by like 80% once you hit 35?
That's the problem.
And then also, I think there's another stat that says that if you have a kid after 36, the chances of Down syndrome like double.
Mm-hmm.
Not that kids with Down syndrome are any less loved or any less valuable or any less of a person. But obviously, I feel like looking after a special needs kids requires a different type of grace that not everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, Ola, do you want to jump in, or Cindy, do you want to finish that thought?
I mean, no, I understand that, and that's why the reality is that it just creates a lot of pressure, and I do see that it's a scary, scary thought, but there is absolutely nothing I can do right now.
And is that internal pressure, external pressure, family pressure?
It's external. I think no family member dare come to me. There's only one particular family member.
She's a spectator!
That will and does. But then at the end of the day, like I said, I can't afford to have, obviously, if you want to do something, you'll do it. I don't afford to have to freeze my eggs. I just don't want to have to do that. Like, I just don't want to. At the same time, I do want to have kids, but it's just like, I can't. When and where? Like, where, when?
Yeah.
When?
When you marry?
When? Yeah. But when will I marry, or when will I have kids?
And sure, I think your question, if I understand you correctly, is more around when will you have kids?
It's more around, when will I have kids?
So I think that, like, in terms of the reason, so I'll speak for myself, but I think trying to speak on behalf of the stats, not for black people, the stats.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think it was on some of the points that you said that it's actually like, what is the reality of, like, one, that stat doesn't speak to me. Like, 18% success rate doesn't, to me, feel like it's worth $8,000 at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. And I think that's going to always have been a barrier for some people in terms of actually should that be the case. I also think that there's a real element in terms of, like, I think, and this is now me speaking for me, I think the reason this situation is difficult is because we're now not the type of women our parents were, right? And I'm not cussing out our generation above, but actually getting married, like, you weren't looking for your soulmate. Like, the amount of times we, do you know, like, I don't feel like, I think the pressure of having a kid and doing things by a clock that we feel has been passed us,
was
passed
never
down,
a problem for them.
We feel was passed down to us must have been a problem for them. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like the reality of our parents' generation marrying the person that was on the table right then and there, that worked, the fact that families set them up and those sorts of things, it wasn't really a case of whether or not you were gonna be happy and this person was gonna be your king and you were gonna be their queen. It was whether or not you could work. It was actually just, are you compatible enough that you could sustain? Do you get what I mean? And actually, I feel like that's the majority of marriages of our parents' generation.
They just manage.
They just, exactly.
Well, there's two different elements to that. There is just manage, and then there is, are you compatible enough and can you sustain?
Yeah.
Compatibility, I just feel like doesn't really, it works in our generation, but we cloud it with a lot of other things as well that we're trying to rely on.
I agree. And I feel like that's another reason why this stat in our generation is even more pressing, because I think women of our generation, we just don't want to, we don't want to take the loss. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, the reality, you've seen your parents struggle, you've seen what their relationships have been like and so on. And you've seen aunties and uncles, auntie boots and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And you've seen the struggles of actually those relationships where they're not based on friendship. They're not based on teamwork.
Loyalty.
They're not based on all of those fundamental things that you need to be able to be bone of my bone. Do you know what I mean? When I'm weak, you're strong. And so actually, if you don't want to walk into a situation when you can't trust someone to be that for you, like, you would rather be in a situation where you don't marry. So I feel like there's less of us that are settling. That's the word.
Yeah.
Too many, like, women of our generation do not want to settle because we can find fulfillment in other things.
Mm.
And so actually, we'll now be working really hard and focusing on so many other things. And then before you know it, you're 28, you're 30 and so on. You've got a great career. You don't have a man that you can marry. Like, cool. I don't feel like it's a problem that much nowadays. But once upon a time, your parents would have been on you. They would have been bringing men to your door on a Saturday weekly to make sure that this wasn't a thing. So then, in terms of your point, in terms of then what that looks like for kids, I feel like...
the marrying thing is not a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I feel like the question really is about kids, because that is the only pressure. It's not about when I'm going to put a ring on my finger of someone that I'm settling with, because I can tell you now, if it is not a king... there is no ring. I'm not collecting a ring of any ordinary person. Do you know what I mean? Because me, I'm not ordinary. Like, that's the reality of it.
Hola the extraordinaire.
Tell them. I see my bio. But no, in all honesty, I'm not taking the ring of someone that's ordinary. Like, I want someone to push me the way that I plan to push them. And if I'm going to settle for someone, believe in this life, it cannot happen.
But then, sorry, on that point, sorry to cut you.
No.
Is it wrong then in me saying I'm willing to have a child now? Because essentially, if I'm willing to have a child by somebody who is not that king of mine, or not.
No, but you're.
But then I feel like I'm settling because I'm going to produce a kid that I'm going to raise to not be and settle.
No, but I don't think I think that's a pragmatic solution.
It's a pragmatic, okay.
That's a pragmatic solution to not wanting to live your life with someone. Because you have to remember, like, when you're in a marriage, you're living your life with someone
day to day,
do you know what I mean? Going through this battle, and actually if you're making the decision from the start that my purpose is to have a child,
mm-hmm.
and actually I need to have it with someone, cool. You're happy with this, I'm happy with this. It's a completely different arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And so you work through that arrangement.
True.
Do you know what I mean? And so actually I completely understand why people would do that.
Mm.
I wouldn't want to be in that situation. As much as I would like kids, I think I would quicker, and this is so horrible to say because I just would hate to do this, I would quicker settle with a man that I can make it work and have a kid in a marriage than have one on my own. Yeah,
okay,
personally.
Okay, and I know we've got maybe 2 minutes to wrap up this convo, so I'm gonna try and base my points on, I guess, three things that I think that we haven't really touched on. So I think one is religion and faith. There is this whole concept of, if you truly believe in God and you believe in God's plan and you believe that God has what's best for you in store, then you should just wait. I think my tension with that thought is, I know that there are many women that are my mom's age that would have loved to have kids, that would have loved to marry, that are single women, living their best lives, mind you,
mm-hmm.
have houses, properties, travel every quarter, but because it was instilled in them that their fulfillment was going to come through wifehood and motherhood,
mm-hmm.
they still feel like they're missing out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I know that my mom struggled to bring us up as a single mother and was looking at them like, rah, you man get new cars every 2 years, I'm still taking TFL, do you know what I mean? So there's that concept of lack of faith. I think that also translates into the whole freezing of eggs conversation, because a lot of religious women, whether they're Christian, Muslim, whatever, will be like, well, if I truly believe that God wants me to have kids, and if I truly believe that God is benevolent and all these descriptions that you have for God, he will allow me to have kids at the given time.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like the other element is, if God loves me, then he wouldn't give me a disabled kid, even though the facts tell us that it's more likely the older you get. So I'm going to put religion, faith and all of that into one bubble. I think the second bit is media. Obviously, we are a lot more influenced by media than the previous generation was, whether it's Disney, whether it's rom-coms, where we feel like we're going to run into the love of our lives in
yeah.
a lift.
Mine's
and
at a petrol station still.
Screaming and shouting.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? We have that concept of this perfect
my
love.
My dad picked my mom up on the side of the road.
That sounds like you might want
to. No, she was walking. She was walking to work. She works in finance. So she was walking to work because the damn phone dropped her off, because she can be mad sometimes.
Okay.
My dad saw it all happen and my dad went, oh, do you want a lift?
And do you know how many men we say no to?
Huh?
This is, do you want a ride?
I would say no. Yeah, okay, I don't know you.
I think in Nigeria at that time it was a normal thing.
Oh, okay.
So she got in the car. She got in the car every day for 5 days. They talked back and forth. And now I'm here.
Wow.
That's cute.
Yeah,
that's very cute.
Cute.
And then you, I mean, you're the only one on the panel. Your parents are still together, right?
Yeah,
that's...
And that was actually going to be my third point, because this generation has so many examples of independent women doing it for themselves in situationships.
Ooh, International Women's Day yesterday. Get it in there.
But in situationships where they've just arranged to have kids, or whether they've been forced into single motherhood, or whether it was a one-night stand. I feel like we have more prominent, less taboo examples of what family is.
Mm.
And... yeah, by default, it just means that we feel like we're open to more options,
mm.
and the concept of marriage is something that we aspire to, if we aspire to it. But even nowadays, if a woman doesn't want to marry, but does want kids, or vice versa, does want to marry, but doesn't want kids, there isn't that level of shame.
Mm.
And it's not even like my tagline from last week, which was, can you shame me shameless? It's not even that. There's no, like, everyone is just
shame.
Team do you.
Yeah. Yeah.
With all of that being said, I agree, I feel like 18% success rate for $8,000 is not high enough for me to do that.
Mm.
With religion in the back of my mind, I'd like to think that actually, I think I said it in a negative way, but I'm also hopeful that God has the best for me, and when it happens, it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like maybe I'm more traditional than I thought.
Mm.
So I also would prefer to have a kid in marriage, and I'm not really out here, you know, doing bits. But in reality, I'm 30 next year, you know, so whatever happens, happens.
Mm.
And yeah, I don't know. I don't even feel like I've fully thought out I haven't fully thought out what I would do.
Yeah, yeah.
But I definitely know that the pressure isn't from my mum, even though she had a couple kids at my age. I don't even think it's really from society, because like I said, we've got examples of different types of women.
Mm.
It is my body clock. It's ticking loudly, ringing in my ears. But yeah, that's it.
Mm. It's deep. Cool, and that is it for this episode. Thank you for listening in. Make sure that you listen in on the... I'm going to start that again. And that is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening in and watching if you have been watching on YouTube and or Instagram. Make sure you follow us on all of our major platforms. Check us out on the YouTube. And if you want the full episode, which you do, you can listen to us on all streaming platforms. Spotify, Apple Music, all of it, all of it. See you next week.